right. Our final case for this morning is United States against Burgard, 11-1863. Mr. Schultz.
May it please the Court, Counsel for the Government, Todd Schultz, Assistant Federal Public Defender, representing the defendant appellant. The district court in this case erred in denying the defendant's motion to suppress. The six-day delay between the warrantless seizure of the defendant's cell phone and the obtaining of a search warrant was unreasonable. The facts before the district court failed to establish that the police acted diligently in pursuing the warrant.
But wouldn't you agree, Mr. Schultz, that by the same token, there's no indication that the police are behaving in bad faith or in a lazy way? Nobody decided he was just going to go on vacation for 6 days and come back and pick up the ball here. They were busy. This is a small community. I guess the problem I have with your theory is that this is not a situation like arraignments where the Supreme Court has said, in the Riverside case, presumptively within 48 hours is okay. This is a very fact-dependent area of the law, and the district judge looks at all the circumstances and finds, as a matter of fact, it seems to me, that this delay was not unreasonable. Shouldn't we? What's our standard of review here? Do you think we should have to review that de novo? Do you think we defer in any way?
Your Honor, my understanding is that the appeal presents a mixed question of law and fact, and so that I do believe the court should apply a de novo standard. In addressing the court's question as to whether or not there was any bad faith, I don't think that there was, but I don't believe that that's the standard. I do think the standard is that the police have to diligently seek a search warrant.
But what does diligence mean here? I mean, as the government points out, they did work on this throughout that week, not 24/7, of course. They were doing other things. They had the armed robbery. There was some delay in the handoff from one person to the next.
Your Honor,
the phone itself, I mean, in some ways you should admire their behavior. Rather than turn on the phone and start searching it, they're sitting there with this phone waiting to get the appropriate permission to see what's on it. It could have been one of the other phones he used with nothing on it.
Well, Your Honor, I believe the Fourth Amendment requires as much that they would pursue a search warrant. And so when we talk about what they did over the course of the 6 days, I think it's important in reviewing the transcript to note that this special agent had notice Wednesday, the day the phone was seized, prior to it being seized, that the phone would be seized. On Thursday, all that was done is he made a phone call to the local police officer who seized the phone. On Friday, he called the assistant United States attorney and had a conversation with her in which she said, begin to draft the warrant. Nothing was done on Saturday. And so I think when we talk about when the court says, was there any laziness, I'm not aware of any Fourth Amendment exception, which is entitled the Saturday exception to the Fourth Amendment, which says...
No, but the district court found that over that weekend, Officer Detective Crew was working on the armed robbery, right?
Your Honor, I don't believe that that's specifically correct. I think that the transcript indicates that one of the things he was working on during that six-day period was the armed robbery. I would note, though, that he indicates he was tasked with preparing a state search warrant in that case and that he accomplished it on Friday. And so I believe there was absolutely nothing done on Saturday in this case, and it was only Sunday evening, some 4 days later, that he even sat down to draft this search warrant. And
think of the incentives that you're inadvertently perhaps creating. This guy is inexperienced in drafting this particular kind of warrant. The law has actually changed over time on cell phones and portable phones. And so he's trying to be careful and get it right. Yes, he doesn't do any work on it on Saturday because he's working on the armed robbery, so the district court finds. He sits down and does a rough draft on Sunday. Maybe it would be very easy for you to do this, but I hate to think of a rule that that sort of forces police officers to draft in a sloppy and quick way when they're trying to get it right.
Your Honor, just with respect to the district court's finding, I don't believe, and I could potentially be mistaken, that there was any suggestion that he was working on anything on Saturday. I don't think the word Saturday is mentioned in the transcript or in the district court's ruling. I think the district court acknowledges generally that he was working on this other case. So he was tasked with working two cases over a six-day period. And with respect to this officer's experience, Your Honor, I would note that he was a 15-year law enforcement veteran, that he had been working for the FBI Cybercrimes Task Force for a period of 4 years, and that he had previously drafted state search warrant affidavits and applications for cell phones. I'd also note
it's
this...
It's not a bad thing that he consults with an assistant U.S. attorney, is it? We would encourage that, I would think.
Well,
and that it go the handoff to someone who has experience in these crimes is a good thing,
those are good things, Your Honor, but what I would hope the court would focus on is the delay. He had notice of this on Wednesday. There's no reason he couldn't have called an assistant United States attorney if he thought there was any urgency or if the time were began.
Did your client ever ask for his phone back? I mean, the consequence of this delay is not an inappropriate search of the phone. The consequence of this delay is that Mr. Burgard was deprived of the possessory interest that he had in his phone for 6 days, whereas perhaps if the whole process had been wrapped up in 2 days and there hadn't been anything on the phone, then he would have gotten his phone back. But did he ever ask for his phone back or in any way assert his interest?
Your Honor, there's no indication he did, but we believe that his interest in the cell phone is substantial.
I'm not saying it isn't, but if he never asked for it back, how do we even know that he considered this six-day period so long as to be burdensome to him, which is to be unreasonable, to use the Fourth Amendment word?
Well, I'm not aware of cases that address or focus on whether the defendant asks for his property back, and if he doesn't, that somehow he doesn't have as much of a Fourth Amendment interest in that property and that there may be no violation.
But I'm interested in the degree of the deprivation. Would you agree that there is actually a balancing process that needs to go on between the government's interest in finding the evidence, you know, once it has probable cause to believe that there may be evidence on the one hand, and his, in this case, possessory interest in the item on the other hand?
Undoubtedly, I believe there is a balancing inquiry that must be undertaken, and I think in this case, given the substantial interest that he has in this cell phone, that it tilts in favor of the seizure being found, the length of the seizure being unreasonable. It is a fact that he was not told where his phone would be taken, nor was he told how or when that phone might be returned to him. And in this Seventh Circuit case of Moya, those facts suggest or mitigate in favor of a finding of it being an unreasonable seizure. Quickly, though, I would just want to point out, with respect to this search warrant for a cell phone that he had no experience federally, although he had drafted them.
Did you say he didn't know where it was being taken?
That's correct. They didn't.
But didn't he go down to the police station and get a receipt for it?
Your Honor, you are correct. You are correct. I don't know that he was explained that it would continue to remain there, although that may have been self-evident. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time, so if there are no additional questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
That's fine. Mr. Quinley.
Yes, Your Honor.
Wait till you're up so that we can record all of your...
Wisdom?
Wisdom. I was groping for the right phrase.
Well, I supplied wisdom, Your Honor.
Right.
And actually, I'm not sure I can supply that.
I did hear on one occasion many years ago at the Supreme Court, Justice Byron White lean forward and say, please speak closer to the microphone. We don't want to miss any of your immortal words.
Well, I'm going to back up so I don't, cause any discomfort. I've had a similar opportunity to the court, but with much less experience, to simply review the written materials in this case. I'm appearing on behalf of Assistant United States Attorney Nikki Gorofsky, who did the work in this case.
A curious statement in the government's brief that I think has to be a misstatement. On page 17 of your brief, it says, first, Sergeant Wilson, who seized the phone, was not a federal agent and cannot be the affiant on a federal search warrant. And then it cites Criminal Rule 41B, which is about who gets to issue a warrant. There's nothing wrong with the state police officer. The state police officers are fined all the time.
Yes, Your Honor. Now, there is, in Nikki's, excuse me, in Ms. Skorupski's defense, a policy within our office that it should be a federal agent who actually serves as the affiant. And in fact, it makes sense, of course, in this case.
41B.
Right.
So.
We'd have a whole lot more appeals if that's a, if that's a reversible error.
Your Honors, and I don't mean to be unserious at all. Actually, in all seriousness, I think Your Honors have already articulated most of what I could articulate in support of the government's position here. I would just respond that the standard of review, of course, is clear error. This is very factual. Judge Herndon actually is in a better position to evaluate the conduct, not only of the law enforcement agent, but also of the assistant United States attorney, and diligently bringing this matter to the attention of an available magistrate. And although
here's the issue, though. I mean, this can't just be outside the scope of any kind of legal constraint, I'll just put it. So I want to know what helps anybody, whether it's a district court judge, a court of appeals, to decide that this case is on the permissible line of delay and this other case has gone beyond acceptable.
I think that's why Leon actually is relevant.
Leon's terrible.
Let's
here.
Not go
Leon has
to,
nothing
we'll
to
ask
do.
You about Leon
well,
in a minute.
No. No,
because
but,
you know
but
what? There would never be a case because there's always a warrant. And so you could wait a year and a half and have a warrant, and then everything would be fine under Leon.
Well, that's right under the ruling, Your Honor. But when you read Leon and the reasoning, it makes sense here because you mentioned
Leon's situation.
No, but you mentioned, Your Honor, Riverside, where the Supreme Court has given the guidance that presumptively 48 hours for arraignment. And you've just pointed out there is no guidance here like that.
Basic Fourth Amendment reasonableness, and you yourself in your brief in terms of that, I'll throw out some things. Were the police proceeding diligently? What were the reasons that caused the delay? Is it because somebody went on vacation, as I said, or is it because it happens to be a little tiny police department and their resources are stretched, and so an extra day or two goes by? Some of the FedEx cases, has a weekend intervened in which it was simply impossible to move forward in an effective way. Was there any bad faith going on? Were the police just sitting on it for some impermissible reason? There have to be things like that, but that's not Leon. That's really just fundamental Fourth Amendment reasonableness.
Well, the only thing I'd say, not about the ruling in Leon, but about the reasoning, having just sat down and read it this morning, is just the notion that there ought to be some guidance before evidence is suppressed. So,
let me give you another reason why Leon doesn't apply here. The fundamental insight, I think, in Leon is that one should not ask a police officer to be smarter than the issuing judge and everybody else, all of the rest of us who are the Monday morning quarterbacks. If an honest, good-faith police officer is given a warrant, that person ought to be able to execute it. But the difference here is the delay before you get a warrant is something that happens inside the police office. It's not that this is just coming out of left field for the police officers. So they should be held accountable for something that's in their control.
That's correct, Your Honor, and the magistrate couldn't do anything about that.
Of course not.
But the officers do, one of the ways you say, is he being diligent, all right, is he acting contrary to some guidance from the court? And you quite properly said, boy, what can we do to help here? Because, frankly, in all these cases, and, of course, there are different situations. You have the airport cases. You have detention of a person's liberty because their luggage is being held. You have this UPS case. So they're very, very different. But the reason why I think it's not totally unreasonable to at least mention Leon is because the very analysis that the court went through in finding as a matter of fact that the officers were diligent I think goes to what the Supreme Court was saying, that, you know, what's the benefit of the exclusionary rule if we pull a surprise, you know, on the officer, the magistrate?
Under that theory, Mr. Quinley, if you all waited for 30 days while a couple of people went on vacation and so on, went to the magistrate and got your warrant, then we would not suppress the evidence, right?
Well, and that might be right, Your Honor, because, frankly, it should be prospective rather than retrospective, because there are merits. Now, I just think that was the view being expressed behind the holding in Leon, but and here we actually have a factual finding of diligence, and actually I think courts like Martin have recognized intervening weekends and holidays as actually being a factor in the reasonableness thing. And if we're going to change that and say you've got, you know, that regardless of the circumstances, this has to be the first thing done immediately after the detention, and that's clearly not the case currently, well, then I think I'll call it a Leon-type exception should be made, that the effect should not be retrospective in the particular case. Well, but that's perhaps more academic than pertinent to this case, because this case, frankly, I think as the court's articulated in its questions, reflecting the facts in the record, it's a pretty clear case where a factual finding made by the district court judge, absent some reason to believe it's clearly an error, shouldn't be disturbed by this court.
Would you agree?
I don't sense the inclination to disturb it.
Yes.
Would you agree, Mr. Quinley, that the privacy interest at stake here in possession is pretty strong? We're talking about smartphones in this day and age where people can have their whole lives, as a practical matter, on their phones.
Well, no, I actually don't agree.
It can and do. I mean, honestly.
I really don't agree. Because I think here,
are you
drawing
a distinction between a phone and a computer? And if so, on what possible basis?
Well, what I'm saying here is I think one of the measures of it is not just what thing it is. You know, hypothetically, yes, a smartphone or a computer could be essential to the ongoing affairs of a particular individual. But I think, as the court mentioned, was there any assertion of such need or interest on the part of this particular person?
That's a slightly different factor.
Under those circumstances, I can understand how Mr. Burghardt might not have been pressing hard to get it back immediately.
It didn't seem to have the same use that the court hypothetically is talking about, but perhaps we ought to consider the category of the thing itself. Yes, he was without this phone, well, actually forever, because it was contraband and it was seized, but theoretically, if there had been no contraband, it could have been returned 6 days later.
Well, I mean, look, you're familiar with the 11th Circuit's decision in the Mitchell case. Do you disagree with that reasoning?
Yes, I agree with Valamont.
I'm sorry?
I like the analysis in Valamont. I think Mitchell, I don't care for the result in Mitchell.
I don't see any urgency. I mean, it's just such a frivolous reason.
Well,
my point of
well, and
not,
I agree.
I'm not asking
and the
you
officer
agree.
Didn't act
not,
perhaps
Mr.
like the
Brindley,
attitude
I'm not
also.
Asking you to agree or disagree with the result in Mitchell, but with the court's comments about the importance of the object in question there.
Well,
the hard drive of the CPU.
Yes, and here the officers at least treated it more seriously than I guess I'm exhibiting here as a representative of the government, and they pursued it diligently. As you recognize, the officer who was going to prepare the warrant didn't have the probable cause facts. Officer Wilson had those. And when he got the report from Officer Wilson, he saw that it was insufficient to lay out the probable cause. And so he contacted him to get more information, which provided that, yes, there was the probable cause information. And frankly, I'm impressed. I don't know Officer Krug directly, but I'm impressed that he worked on the weekend to get this drafted so that it was to the AUSA, who also was engaged in other matters that Monday, but still got the warrant to a magistrate on Tuesday. So I look at this record, and perhaps our standards aren't as good as they ought to be, but I see a diligent AUSA acting upon the efforts of a diligent officer. And I think Judge Herndon saw the same and made a factual finding that the court can't really disturb and doesn't need to go on to Leon, because, as you say, Leon's about the magistrate's decision, not the officers in the field, before they apply for the search warrant. But if the court were inclined to try to help law enforcement by making any brighter line rules in the Seventh Circuit, they ought to be prospective. And I'm not sure that they're needed. I think good judges like Judge Herndon, reviewed by this court, can make these factual determinations.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Schultz?
Little wisdom.
Yes, Your Honor. After hearing the evidence at the motion to suppress, the district court said, and I quote, "There was certainly a hurry to get everybody's hands on the cell phone and less of a hurry to seek out a search warrant." The district court then went on to say, and I quote, "It certainly sounds as though everything could have been moved up a couple of days." The reality that this search warrant could have been obtained at least a couple of days earlier by the district court's own statement suggests that the delay here was unreasonable. There is no compelling reason for the delay. This idea that he, having not drafted a search warrant before for a cell phone, this was a boilerplate search warrant. 9 of the 11 pages were boilerplate. There were 5 paragraphs of specific facts. By the time he sat down to write it 4 days later, it took him an evening, so maybe a couple of hours.
But I have to say, Mr. Schultz, reading the overall set of decisions in the Fourth Amendment from the Supreme Court, I think Judge Herndon, and I certainly accept the point, that this could have been done better, but I don't see the Supreme Court imposing a perfect practices rule on police behavior for Fourth Amendment. And they have discouraged the courts of appeals from trying to raise the bar that high. I mean, I think what Judge Herndon said is, yeah, it could have been better, but it was good enough.
Well, I think it's not setting the bar very high if this officer is working 2 cases and it takes him 6 days to draft a search warrant. I would just note that there was no work performed on Saturday. He was told to draft the warrant on Friday. He didn't get around to it till Sunday. I believe that is not diligence by any term of the word. And so if the Fourth Amendment is to have any substance to it, at some point there is clear guidance. Is there compelling reasons? In this case, there wasn't. He never asked for help. He didn't say he couldn't get it done. He never asked someone else. If you would like to see a case where law enforcement resources were overwhelmed, or at least arguably they were, I would point the court to the Ninth Circuit case of United States versus Doss. And I think in that case, they were preparing search warrant affidavits at a pace of one search warrant affidavit every 75 minutes. And there was a resulting delay of 1 to 23 days in those cases. I guess there were 441 packages that were seized. And the Ninth Circuit, in a split decision, said that delay wasn't reasonable. So the idea that the government wants to stand here and say that a 6-day delay to draft a boilerplate search warrant is acceptable under the terms of the Fourth Amendment, I just don't believe that's so.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We appreciate your help. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow.